problem is that May 21 will not be a normal day. We know beyond a shadow of a doubt it is going to happen. And we don't even countenance the question, what if it doesn't happen? It's going to happen.
Harold Camping, CEO of Family Radio in California. His followers came to believe beyond all doubt that on May the 21st, 2011, the world would come to an end. On this judgment day, earthquakes would devastate the world and God would take his chosen ones up to heaven.
Read the flyer and the flyer said that judgment day was May 21st.
When I first heard the message of May 21st, I wasn't completely convinced.
Once I came to the belief that the world really is going to end, it was very overwhelming for me personally. It was very overwhelming.
You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Today, how we turn beliefs into certainties and mistake them for the truth. The voices you just heard are from a documentary called Right Between Your Ears. It was produced by neuroscientist Krista Mayer from King's College London and filmmaker Sheila Marshall. They decided to follow these believers to get some insights into how we can become convinced we are right, even when we're wrong. They thought it particularly relevant today. The Brexit vote in the UK and the election of Donald Trump in the US has made us more aware of the many controversial and polarised issues we're faced with. Krista Mayer and the film crew spent weeks with some of Harold Camping's followers to explore how they came to believe that the world would come to an end on Judgment Day in 2011.
We came to know them as perfectly ordinary, normal people. There was nothing strange about them. And for instance, one of the main characters in our film is a philosophy student who's just a few weeks away from graduating. Another person that's in the film is a retail manager who was very successful in her job, but a few months before the end of the world decided to leave her job because that was the only way that she could tell her colleagues about this big truth that she saw. We met many other people that were quite similar. So for instance, a scientist, we met several scientists, we met a person who was a history major from Berkeley University. The daughter of Harold Camping is one of the characters in our film. And so all of these people had gradually become convinced that May 21 was going to be Judgment Day. The reasons behind this was they had a big system of numbers and dates that Harold Camping and other people, not just Harold, had extracted from the Bible over the years. And within this calendar that first looked back in history, they thought they could find out where the history had started, but then they also thought that they could find out where history would end. So gradually over time, they became very convinced that May 21st was going to be Judgment Day.
After you see all the evidence for it, it's like a neatly tight web. It's neatly organized and there's no room for error.
I realized that it was completely true. It all fit together in my mind and I knew it was right.
You've somehow gotten to this corner and there is no exit. There is no alternative. There is no plan B.
And what was it about Harold Camping that must have been so charismatic to have these people follow him so stridently?
Of course, there's always a little bit of the leadership effect in there. And he was a person with a voice that was resounding strongly and that people were attracted to. But it wasn't, charisma wasn't the only reason. He also came across as very trustworthy. He had sort of a very exemplary life. Lots of people that we met that were listening to him or that came to his weekly meetings in the Bay Area were there because they were disenchanted with the big mega churches in the US, where a lot of things seem to turn around money. And that wasn't the case in Harold Camping's group. He was leading a very humble life. He wore suits from Walmart that were 10 years old. He drove an old car. He'd built his own house. He'd been married for 60 years, has 6 kids. So there was a lot in his life that they could trust him for. And then when he starts talking about this date, 21st of May, people in the beginning were very skeptical. Of course, when you get something like that on your doorstep, you're not just automatically rolling over and accepting it. But if they said, well, we trusted him on all these other things, so let's start looking into this, then they started a process by which they made themselves more convinced as time progressed.
Social psychologists use the analogy of a pyramid to explain how people's beliefs become more and more firmly entrenched over time. Krista Mayer.
The pyramid analogy is that when you don't have a strong opinion about something, you're at the tip of the pyramid and you're there with other people who are in a very similar position to yourself. But when you take that first decision to start looking into it, to say like, well, maybe on the balance of things, there is something here and I should really start looking into it, that's like a step off the pyramid. And that sets into motion a process of self-justification, of finding reasons why you made the right decision. And there was a lot of material for them to look at. There was a lot of big theory of numbers that they could look at where they would then be able to say, yeah, there is something here. I didn't make a mistake making this decision to look into this. People who take that step off on the other side that say, hold on, he can't know this end of the world date, they would set in motion a different process by which they're removing themselves from him and from the people who went down the other side of the pyramid. So as time went by, they became more and more convinced on either side, and then some of the ones who didn't believe him left the group, and we didn't meet so many of them, but the ones who did make that decision to go with him became more and more convinced as time progressed. And so that descent of the pyramid really means that the further you go down, the more you become convinced, the harder it is to turn back on your steps to say, hold on, maybe I am going in the wrong direction. And the further you go from your original position and from people who went the other way.
And were you able to pick up reasons why particular people went down one side of the pyramid and not the other? Were there personality factors or people in certain circumstances that were more likely to strengthen their beliefs?
Not really. The individual reasons that made one person go one way and another person go another way they're very indeterminate. That first step of the pyramid is almost by chance whether you will go one way or the other way. The one factor that we did agree on is that the people who went all the way down the pyramid and said, this is certainly going to happen on May 21st, were comfortable going against the grain, going against their immediate friends and family. And so they're kind of, in a way, they're kind of the pioneers of ideas, the ones that persevere against everyone in their surroundings saying, you're wrong in believing this. Other than that, we didn't really see anything that would determine people going one way or another. It really is the mixture of experiences that you've had up until that moment in time that determine your initial position, your initial step of the pyramid.
In his documentary, Right Between Your Ears, neuroscientist Krista Mayer draws on recent brain scanning research to show what belief and disbelief look like in the brain.
In the film, we repeat an experiment that was done at UCLA a few years earlier that indeed looks at belief and disbelief in the brain. And we did it with one of the characters in the film, Maurice. We took him in the scanner before and after. And the main reason was to be able to talk about. And what came out of that study is that there is a difference between believing something, the way that neuroscientists and psychologists define it, means accepting something as true, versus disbelieving, which means rejecting something as false. And that difference between those two states appears to be independent of the type of belief. So it appears to be independent whether you're talking about a mathematical belief or a factual belief or an ethical belief or a religious belief. It's not to say that religious thoughts are the same as mathematical thoughts. That's not the case. But when you look at the difference between believing and disbelieving, then there appears to be something fundamental to that difference that is independent of the type of belief. It also appears to be independent of the type of believer, because in one of the original experiments, they took a group of dedicated atheists and a group of dedicated Christians, and they asked them questions about their religious beliefs, which obviously atheists and Christians answer in the opposite way. So for instance, an atheist will say God is a myth, yes, that's true. The Christian will say God is a myth, that's false. But regardless of the fact that they respond to these questions in opposite ways, there was no difference at the group level between the atheists and the Christians in that distinction between believing and disbelieving. So once we are very convinced of something, it appears that our brains flag that up in the same way, that believing and disbelieving on the inside is the same for all of us, regardless of whether what we are believing is actually true or isn't true.
You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm, and I'm speaking with Krista Mair, Research Fellow in Neuroscience at King's College London and co-producer of the documentary Right Between Your Ears. The filmmakers followed a group of people who came to believe without doubt that the world was coming to an end. On the 21st of May 2011, earthquakes would devastate the planet and God would select a chosen few to rise to heaven. The film crew had spent weeks with the believers leading up to Judgment Day, so they'd also formed quite a close bond with them.
On the night, we find ourselves invited to a place where a group of them will meet. And as we are going there, we are a little bit sort of apprehensive, not knowing what will happen, and a little bit concerned and not knowing how it's going to be. I remember that we are with them in the house and we're getting close to the moment where it's meant to start happening. And so at that time, around that time, all the big TV channels in the US are starting to put out their shows about this end time belief, about May 21. And we found ourselves in the room with them as we are watching this footage on CNN and Fox and ABC about their beliefs.
Right now, thousands of people across America are literally preparing to meet their maker before the sun sets. So, what drives doomsday theories?
When it got later and later, we understood that it wasn't something that was going to happen after all.
And the only thing that you can compare it to is if you're watching, for instance, an election where it looks like your party is going to lose, but the final results haven't been called yet, so there is still time for things to change. But it doesn't look good, and you're starting to get that sinking feeling in your stomach that it's going to go the wrong direction. And I think that feeling that people may have had when in the UK they were watching the referendum, the Brexit vote, in the US when they're watching the Trump vote, that kind of feeling that you get that things are going in the wrong direction, that's the feeling that there was in the room.
And when they had to face the fact that they were wrong, did they accept that straight away, that they could admit that they were wrong and there was a mistake?
It takes time. So the state that you enter into, that sinking feeling, is what psychologists call cognitive dissonance. So they went into this state of cognitive dissonance, and for each of them, the emotional side of it is you feeling sort of confused and you feel dread, and it's really a horrible feeling. It's as uncomfortable as hunger and thirst And that feeling everyone has to deal with in their own particular way.
Did we put out a message that was wrong? And if so, you know, how are we to look at that in view of our participation? And a lot of us were very troubled about that. How did this happen to us? You know, we're not illiterate. We're all coming from different walks of life, but yet we weren't necessarily naive people that this could happen so easily too.
And so we saw people dealing with that very differently. It takes time for all of them. So it took from hours to days before everyone found a way of reconciling their dissonance, of sort of moving ahead of that. Initially, there was moments of waiting still and postponing where people said, like, look, it didn't happen at 11, but maybe it's now going to happen at 6 in the morning. And then we got phone calls where people would say, well, now maybe it's 6 at night that is going to happen, 6 in the evening. And so first there is that postponing, like things can still change. And then individuals start pulling in different directions. And some people start saying, well, it's already twice that we've postponed it now, or three times, so I think it might not happen. Whereas other people are still hanging in there and believing that it will happen. For Harold himself, it was very difficult in the day after as well. And it took him at least 24 to 48 hours before he sees a way out. And his way out is that they were wrong in predicting that the earthquake and the rapture would happen on the 21st of May, but they were right in everything else. And Judgment Day did happen spiritually. It didn't happen physically, but it happened spiritually. And the end of the world is now still going to happen on the 21st of October. The reason why he did make that adjustment to his beliefs is that they always had that date of the 21st of October, but they had previously seen it as a period from 21st of May to 21st of October in which Judgment Day would happen. And now everything got pushed back to 21st of October. Now, not everyone goes with him when he comes up with that particular explanation. Only about one third of the people that we met took that particular explanation on board, and two thirds of the people we met found other ways of dealing with their dissonance and pulled in different directions. So everyone shifted their position, but they didn't shift in the same direction. Some of them justified their mistake and then set themselves up for another mistake 5 months down the line, whereas a lot of people actually said, we got into this on the wrong premise, and there is something that we have to learn from this. There's some responsibility that we have to take for putting out this message that was wrong.
Why was it different for some than others? What separates people?
That's indeed a very interesting question, and it comes down to the fact what the most important key parts of the belief system are for each individual person. So you can think of cognitive dissonance as a resistance against changing in certain directions. And so whatever part of the bigger belief system is the strongest for you personally will put up the biggest resistance. And your brain will try to find ways in the directions where there is less resistance. So for Harold himself, who had been working for 30 or 40 years on this calendar of history, and these numbers and the dates that all pointed to 21st of May and 21st of October, questioning that calendar was almost impossible. That was for him the path of the strongest resistance. Whereas for instance, for another person in our film, Jane, who's the retail manager, she herself had not invested anything personally in that calendar. She was just asking other people who were checking the numbers and always rechecking them. She would ask them always, like, is this correct? Is this true? And then those people would say, yes, it's correct. We are checking it all the time. So her path of strongest resistance was in the fact that she was listening to those people and that she was trusting Harold Camping. She didn't have as much involvement in that system itself. So for her, it was much easier to give up those numbers and then to question, like, why is it that I started believing this while I trusted Harold? I was wrong to trust him. So her way out was to say, I'm cutting off family radio and I'm cutting off Harold from my thinking because he took me in the wrong direction. So for each person, there were these individual reasons and these individual bits of resistance that meant that they went different directions.
You have not actually apologized publicly, have you? Are you prepared
to... asked your question, just wait.
Are you prepared to apologize?
You're going
to
come in? Okay.
Hold on, we have to pause for a moment.
You'll be next after.
Unfortunately, Harold Camping had a stroke 2 months after the supposed judgment day, so he disappeared from the public eye. Krista Mayer.
We went back in October and we spoke to people. Then we spoke, for instance, to Harold's daughter, and she said after October 21st that he was just as confused as anyone else. And at that time, he didn't have a solution. But then 6 months later, he actually finally was ready to admit that he had been wrong on setting these dates. So it took him many, many months more before he could say, the whole endeavor was a mistake. The whole thing that I did, that I engaged in, was wrong. And eventually, even a year later, it was even easier for him to admit it. And so he was capable of saying, I was wrong in setting these dates.
In his work in neuroscience at King's College London, Krista Mayer draws on some of the observations he made in the making of the documentary Right Between Your Ears, and he applies them to what's going on in society today.
The three main aspects that we investigate in the film, which is how you go from a weak to a strong conviction on something, then how beliefs look like in a person's brain, and then how do we deal with having our strong beliefs challenged, those three principles are at play in all the polarization and in all the big controversial and contested issues that we're seeing in society at the moment. For instance, climate change or the way that immigration is becoming a contested issue at the moment. I do look at them through those three lenses of people moving from a weak to a strong conviction, then how that is similar for each of us, regardless of where we end up, regardless of what our sets of beliefs is. Once we become very passionate about something, we then are passionate in the same way as someone who believes the opposite to what we are believing. And then the third factor, which is how do we deal when someone challenges our beliefs, especially our beliefs that are tied to our identity, to our sense of self, to the things that are really important to us, how that makes us feel, and how we, as a result, may be lashing out at other people and denigrating them and demonizing them for challenging us, for believing the opposite what we're believing. Those are principles that you see at play in the polarization at the moment. So I apply a lot of these insights in work that I do together with climate scientists, together here in the UK, around the outcome of the Brexit referendum. And so I apply these principles in communication training or in writing that I do to make people more aware that once we are very strongly convinced of something, we're not different from the people who are convinced of the opposite.
And what role do you think the widespread use now of social media platforms have in what people believe and whether they're able to come to agreement with each other?
It certainly doesn't make things easier, but it's not the only driver of this. Even before social media existed in 2000s or at any time in history, there was polarization. There were opposing groups that hated each other and sometimes would kill each other over their disagreements. But what social media does is that it accelerates these processes to a certain degree, and it makes it possible for beliefs that fit well within what a certain group believes, for certain ideas that fit well with what a certain group believes, to spread really rapidly, even if they are wrong. And that's where the fake news comes from. Those are stories that sound very plausible to people who are in a certain position on a topic. And that's why these spread within those communities. But it's not limited to only Trump supporters are only people on one part of the political spectrum who can fall for this. It can be anywhere on the political spectrum. Once you hear a story that sounds very believable, then it can spread very rapidly. And what we need to do to counterbalance that is to become a little bit more savvy and a little bit more cautious in what we are accepting to be true, what sounds plausible to us. We have to have a system where we say, hold on, am I not accepting this too unquestioningly, too easily, for me to fall into the trap of spreading things that aren't true? It's amazing what the human brain can believe. So it's not that every person can believe everything. Like, I personally wouldn't be believing that the end of the world was going to happen on the 21st of May, because I was not in a position where that sounded plausible to me. But in general, the human brain can believe many, many things. And that's the thing that I became even more aware of making the documentary. And also that whenever people have a strong belief and are vocal in their belief, that they have lots of reasons for that. So we often think about people that disagree with us, that they can't have any reasons for holding those beliefs. But if you dig deeper into it, they often have a whole sets of reasons and belief systems that sit behind their taking a public stance for what they're believing in. And it may not make sense to us from the outside, but it makes a lot of sense to them from the inside.
Having spent so much time with this group of people who were convinced that the end of the world was about to happen, I wondered whether the filmmaker, Chris DeMare, ever contemplated, even for a split second, that they could be right.
That's a really interesting question. So when we would be talking to them, we couldn't understand what they were going on about. It sounded really incomprehensible, almost like someone trying to explain quantum mechanics to us without us being able to understand quantum mechanics. It wasn't until months after the date that I had really started reading their writings and digging into it that I started to understand the big sets of reasons that they had for believing this. So it wasn't so much what they told us on that level of the belief system, but it was because we were spending weeks with them. Every day we would drive up to the compound of Family Radio and they would say, oh, you're here again. And so over time there's a personal bond that forms, and they're also starting to look for reasons why we're there. They would look at us and they would say, you know, you think you're here for the documentary, but maybe you're also here to hear this message and to find out about Judgment Day and this date. And there was a lot of concern in that, in the way that they said that. And that's the thing that made this social connection that you feel with people was the thing that had sort of the pulling power in it. And I remember when, on the night of the eve of the 21st, when we are with a group of believers and we're about to start watching the reports on television about May 21st, and Sheila's setting up the camera in the room where the TV is standing, and I go and sit down in a chair, and the second I sit down in the chair, there's this thought that flows through my head. What if we do see reports of a big earthquake in New Zealand, which is where, according to their prediction, it was meant to start happening in the Pacific Ocean? Mm-hmm. And so that thought was very, very fleeting. It was just a second and it was gone again. And it wasn't a thought in itself, there was a feeling attached to it. It was like it felt really real at that moment, but it just lasted a second. And that's to say that even if you don't understand the reasons behind something, just the personal connection that you have with people can actually mean that you are assimilating what other people are saying. And that's the reason, for instance, why psychologists are very cautious at studying real cults, because this group wasn't even a cult. They were just more a loose network of people that were converging around this belief. But psychologists are very cautious of studying cults because it can really suck you in if you become part of a group like that. And before you know it, you go down your own pyramid and you end up very convinced of what it is that these other people are believing.
Chris DeMare, Research Fellow in Neuroscience at King's College London and a co-producer with Sheila Marshall of the documentary Right Between Your Ears. You can find more information about the doco at their website, rightbetween.com, and that link is on our All in the Mind website too. The music in the documentary was composed by Jorge Puig. Production today by Diane Dean and sound engineer Andrei Shabanov. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Thanks for your company. Till next time.